It is Monday, March 23rd, and this is Irish Illustrated Insider. I'm Tim O'Malley, joined today by Tim Priester and Drew Mentock of Irish Illustrated. Very busy sports weekend, notably missing the Notre Dame men's basketball team, but the women's played, and they advanced to, well, they will take on number 3 seed Ohio State today. I believe the women are 5.5-point underdogs, guys. Fencing title, number 16 for the Irish program. Priester, I saw you posted that Notre Dame feed on Irish Illustrated. That's the first for the men since they've split up, though, as I read, that they were used to be co-ed. Several titles. Junior Day, we will have Tom Loy and Eric Thomas with a separate podcast dedicated to Junior Day. Successful from all angles, except Eric said that this is one of those, he sent me a note saying the vast majority of guys there said they plan to take this through official visits, so there won't be a ton of commitment smoke immediately, but it will be good to have Tom and Eric leave their perspective on Junior Day. And the last thing to wrap up before we get to Notre Dame football is I did bet UConn women over 90.5, and they decided to score 90. And I think that might be the basketball gods laughing at me, Tim Priester, over time and all my comments.
Well, you are
if you know, all my comments, and they got me with a 15-point fourth quarter, by the way, UConn.
Oh, no. Oh, my God. What are the odds of that? Yeah, well, that you deserve that, considering all the comments that you've made through the years about the other side of the aisle there. But Notre Dame women plus 5.5. Don't think that's a real good matchup for them against Ohio State. But if you saw Hidalgo the other day, I mean, she has, as we all know, ways of taking over the game. But, you know, the depth of talent is just not there to go very far.
Drew, we had podcasts and instant analysis on the first practice we saw. They have since had a second practice Saturday and have finished up a third today on Monday. But just want to get your guys' impressions from the first viewing, maybe a little bit more of an overview. We went very micro level in our reports, as we should, and maybe a little bit more of a macro level thing. We'll be back in the Irish Athletic Center this week for one more four-period practice.
Yeah, I mean, I think the overall talent and just I think how intense the first practice was. I mean, I know we talked about some of the scuffles, but to see how you can tell they're itching after not playing since the end of November to play football and get back out there. And I mean, maybe there could be some concern about that peaking too early with that, but I tend to not think so. I think it's good that they have that intensity. There's only 15 practices, really 14 since one of them is the Blue Gold game, and that doesn't have the same level of intensity. So I think what really sticks out to me overall is just like how much they were getting after it without any pads on day one and how talented we already think this team is anyways.
I think the whole leave no doubt theme really, really resonated with the team during the offseason, and Marcus Freeman has a great ability to do that. But I did want to, you know, went through the transcriptions and stuff, and I think as a press corps overall, I think we need to do a better job of asking questions of Chris Ash, because I think we need to ask specifically, and we've talked about this with certain coaches, ask specifically about players, because you get a really good idea from him, you know, exactly what he thinks. If there's a guy he's excited about, he will say it. And here's the example I want to provide for everybody. He was asked about Rodney Dunham.
Just want to put that out there.
That was it. Thank you, Tim. and I really, as a press corps, we need to do a better job with him, I think, because there aren't enough comments about players. And I understand that it was practice number one, though.
So
I get that. Second time through, and I get that. But these are some of the comments that Chris Ash made about Dunham. Great offseason. Gained 20 pounds. Looks great physically for a frosh. Serious about what he does. Shows up every single day. Coachable. Plays hard. Tries to do things right. If he makes mistake, takes it personally and tries to correct it, the sky's the limit. At that point, he said, well, you know, it's too early to tell, but, you know, for a freshman, what he's done has been, you know, physically has been very impressive. I think that's very revealing for a guy like Chris Ash, who isn't necessarily one to dole out, you know, compliments so readily. For him to make all of those comments about Rodney Dunham, I think says a lot. In addition to what Drew pointed out from the practice the other day, that he essentially could have had 3 sacks. And I talked about that great stride off the edge. When you hear comments like that after the first spring practice from Chris Ash, I think to myself, all right, this is a guy that's got a really great chance to be in the mix right from the beginning.
Drew, that's why it's important we see practice. And this is not to tell you guys that, you already know that. But I asked about Rodney Dunham because I was able to watch Rodney Dunham play in periods 11, 12, 13, and 14, not on a sled. I wouldn't have had a question about Rodney Dunham if he was on a sled. There'd have been no way I would have had the same question because it wouldn't have been relevant. I wouldn't have had any idea. So I really think spring practices, we could use another one. I'm just going to throw that out there. It's the spring. There's enough. It's not enough going in. We can't see another full practice. Right in the middle. Beginning, middle, end.
Well, you're the man. You're the man to push for it, T.O. So.
Yeah, I just think it would help. I get the fall. If I was a coach, I'd be like, I don't need anybody's cameras in here.
Oh, sure.
Practice number one and all that stuff. But in the spring, it's different.
Yeah,
sorry,
to that point.
Sometimes, yeah.
No, you're good. To that point, I think we had had questions before on like, how do you try and predict who's like the next up and coming player, who's going to break out? And having that coach quote and our own eye say it really gives validity to those opinions. It's not just like, well, is a coach overselling this? Did I see the one good practice? You put those two things together, and in addition to like things we might be hearing, and you can really get a sense of who can be emerging.
Priestray mentioned in our outline here, I wanted to do a takeaway that might carry into this fall. And my point here is you and I, several years ago, watched Jason Onyeh, and he all of a sudden showed up. And we said, wow, for 2 years, I never thought about that guy. And he showed up. But it takes more than that very next year. That doesn't mean they immediately are coming on. There's a guy that I sat next to you during this practice, and you looked down and you mentioned him. Mylon Graham looks different, man. Yes. That is an observation for this fall you saw at the first spring practice.
It was immediate. It was a first rep. And it was just the receivers running, you know, little short routes along the sideline. The pace off the snap, the quick twitch, and that was one of the things that Mike Denbrock mentioned right away. There's a reason why he went to Ohio State, and I, you know, maybe we go into it and it's like, okay, well, here's a guy from Ohio State. He's going to look better than everybody else. But we've done this long enough to know the difference between, you know, quick twitch and really quick twitch, and that was Mylon Graham the other day, no doubt about it.
Drew, did you have a similar takeaway? Not only about Mylon Graham, of course, because you were watching him as well. But there's some things that, you know, like, I think it's great that Bettis looks like an athlete now. I don't think that immediately impacts this fall. I think that impacts his career, that Jerome Bettis Jr. looked like a different human being when we saw him. That's like my Jason Onyeh example from 2022 or whatever year it was, Tim, 2023, where we're like, wow, I never even noticed that guy at a practice. That still takes a while. Armel Mukum, we're still waiting for. We noticed him at a practice 2 years ago. Maybe this is his year. There's still things you can see in opening practice that they actually do carry over the season.
I mean, I don't think we're like shocked that Tay Johnson played like that, but I think if we go into next season and Don Shuler is clearly their third best defensive back because you have two that are just so incredible. Like if that type of player is the guy who you're like, he's third, or I mean, Dallas Golden played well, but I think just the potential of how, not only do I think they could have the best secondary in the country, but you might have two truly like transcendent talents that can erase part of the field, and then everywhere else is still strong and good too. Like just what they can do with the secondary and how that makes, you know, linebacker, even if KVA's, once he comes back, like if you're linebackers, then you only need two, and once KVA and Bowen, like just that whole back seven then is super talented too. So just the different things that they can do with an elite secondary, if that kind of comes to fruition, I think could be really interesting to watch.
I think that's a great perspective, and I never put it in those terms, but I mean, Don Shuler is one hell of a college football player, and you're right. I mean, in relation to those other two, he can't quite make the same amount of plays that they do. But that's not casting aspersions upon Shuler. It's just how good the other two are. But that you want to make an argument for Notre Dame having the best secondary in the country. That's a good. Those three are a good starting point. And you know, we haven't even seen McKinney yet, but. You remember Deion Sanders felt before the start last season. He said he was a first-round draft pick. Now, I don't know how frequently he throws compliments around. We don't cover him, but still a comment like that. And then we know that Christian Gray, he's been torched a couple times, and he's had some interference penalties, but he's been a good football player. And I think Dallas Golden really, really has a very high ceiling too.
I think Christian Gray is extremely valuable because he's not their number one or number two or number three. Best defensive back. He might be their fourth best defensive back. We don't know everything about Jaden Sanders and DJ McKinney yet. You can see DJ McKinney go out there and get torched, right? We didn't know Devonta Smith was going to have trouble matching up with Malachi Toney. We didn't know Carson Hobbs would be annihilated by him. So you have to watch Christian Gray's crime. And you've said this a couple times. Part A is he plays opposite Leonard Moore. And part B, he's played forever against a bunch of really good receivers and they go after him. They're going to go after the other guy too.
Receivers make, like, we expect Notre Dame's receivers to make plays against other DBs. It's as good as Notre Dame is, in the secondary, it's going to happen to somebody, and it's more likely to happen to Gray because he's not quite as good as as those other guys.
I want to revisit Drew's comment because that was a great point about the if Adon Schuller's three. And it's a three because the other guys are absolutely freakazoids. You don't usually get that where they're absolute freaks, and there's a couple of them, like Kyle Hamilton, obviously. But Notre Dame, right. Notre Dame's had good safeties over the last 10 years, over the last 8 years. But you're not comparing Jalen Elliott and Alohi Gilman to Tay Johnson when they're doing things, right? And those are, I mean, those Alohi Gilman's a leader and a pro. You're not comparing, you are comparing Kyle Hamilton, but you're just not, you don't go back and say Zeke Mata and Jamora Slaughter are Tay Johnson. You think Harrison Smith is, but it's a different level of athlete, and they've been blessed at corner to keep getting them. Benjamin Morrison was almost like Leonard Moore.
I agree. And Tay Johnson, too. I mean, just to see that level of athlete. I mean, first, I mean, Kyle Hamilton had different traits, but he still ran like a 4.59. Like Tay Johnson, just, I mean, his instincts are beyond what I thought they were, but he just is so explosive. So yeah, when you combine those two level things, and he's not quite nowhere near as long as Kyle Hamilton, but he's still 6'2" and long. Like, he just has all these really tantalizing traits that I don't know if we've quite seen a Notre Dame safety like that since I can remember the team. So he just kind of does everything, and that's what made it so impressive that he started putting together that mental aspect and really watching so much film and stuff, like they said last year. Like, he really dedicated himself to the other part, which allowed these other skills to really blossom.
I think Kyle Hamilton just looks different because he looked like an outside linebacker covering that much ground, right, 30 yards deep in the secondary. You couldn't believe the guy was doing that. It was, and that was a treat to watch too. Wish he would have played one more year. Tim Priester, that would have been nice. Would have been a helpful. I think Marcus wishes he would have played one more year too, because that was Freeman's first season. Might have helped the Marshall game. Our Tom Zwiller found the Bill Connolly's S&P initial projections, and Priester, you do a different version of this. You do it with Notre Dame's schedule only, and Notre Dame is number one nationally in returning production, Drew Mentok, and I think you followed up SMU and BYU are the only opponents in the top 25 that Notre Dame has.
Yeah, and then Syracuse was just outside that at 27, Stanford 33, Wisconsin 35, and Purdue 40. So those are the ones that were kind of up there.
But yeah, Miami was 78.
Yes, Miami was 78. So I think it's significant just too that Notre Dame finished fifth in SP Plus last year too. So to be already a team that did so well last year and then have so many guys returning is obviously going to be significant. He did note that, like, leading the nation in returning production isn't quite as impressive as it was in the past. Like, exactly. Their percentage, I think, is 72. Yeah, 72 would have been seventh last year and 14th 2 years ago. So with the transfer rules, I think he said, like, teams average like 22 transfers a year now or something like that. So when you take that into account, it's maybe less significant, but still, Notre Dame was already considered by his metrics one of the best teams in the country. And then 72% of their production is coming back. So which you consider, you lose Jeremiah Love and Jerrion Price in terms of returning production, and then you still have 72% coming back. That's pretty good.
I was not aware that Connolly followed up with that, and that's exactly what I was going to say, that it's a different ball game now because of the transfer portal. And I will warn everybody that, you know, Miami 78, trust me, they did very, very well in the transfer portal.
They also brought back two really important players.
Yeah, they did. And so, you know, you can't read nearly as much into that. Another team, Indiana, if you don't think that Indiana has absolutely reloaded, they've got a bunch of guys from the top 100. They made themselves a very attractive option. And Kurt Cignetti made Indiana a national championship winner. So, but still very important, still homegrown, very important to Notre Dame because Marcus Freeman wants to major in high school recruiting. And so that's all really, really positive for Notre Dame. SMU, BYU, two of the better teams on Notre Dame's schedule this year. Those will be two of the most challenging games on the schedule.
And I did see one argument kind of come through Connolly's thread. It was a Georgia fan who made a good point I never would have thought about. It's like, I never see the dogs in this because everybody goes pro. We just reload with more pros. I was like, well, that's a good point too. I mean, you know, that Notre Dame got them, and teams can get Georgia nowadays, but that's true. If you just reload with a whole bunch of pros, your S&P returning production isn't quite as important. Tim Priester, we have a slew of baseball questions being asked, but number one is your impressions of the sweep over the weekend, and follow up, if it's not, I don't think it's too early anymore, is 35 to 40 wins now a realistic total?
Yeah, very, very impressive weekend for Notre Dame. I mean, just being completely honest, I was not impressed with Clemson. Terrible defensive team. Not the pop in their lineup. Of course, we saw Louisville the week before, and they had 50 hits in three games. Although Clemson had 38 in three games and out-hit Notre Dame yesterday 12-8. But Notre Dame played like the better team and played like a winner. They got great pitching from Jack Riddell on opening night, Friday night. He threw a four-hit shutout, went the distance, I think threw 117 pitches. Excellent chance of Jack Riddell being in the major leagues at some point in his career. Game number two is where Notre Dame starts a freshman left-hander, and it's a little bit more taxing on the bullpen. Bullpen hasn't pitched as well in game two. And then Ty Uber, who transferred from Stanford, has been really, really good. He scratched and clawed his way through five innings to qualify for the win. But to the question, can they win 35, 40 games? I think it's like they're allowed 56 regular season games. Notre Dame rarely plays that many because of their location and weather. But if it, like, you know, they'd have to go 40-16 during the regular season to get to, you know, at 56 games. Now, that includes, you know, ACC tournament and NCAA tournament if you make it. But I think, you know, they were 32-21 last year. Yeah. 40 is probably too much, you know, because their bullpen and their you know, their number two starter, that's probably going to cost them. It's going to catch up to them a little bit. But that's a 35-40 win team potentially. The maturity of this team kind of blows me away, and it starts with, you know, Birkeland in center field in the leadoff spot and Quattrani at catcher in the number three spot. They really drive the car. I love Davis Johnson's. He's a junior. There are very few juniors on the team. He seems like a leader to me, especially when he hits four homers in three games against Louisville. So extremely impressed. Notre Dame's defense actually wasn't very good. They had three errors on Friday and three errors on Sunday, and that's not typically who they've been. The most you've had errors committed by two freshmen and a sophomore on the infield, and so that showed up a little bit. But great moxie, great determination, refusal to lose a couple times early on here. The 6-3 start in the ACC with your first two series on the road at Duke and Louisville is a tremendous start. But this is a, you know, you don't hear me say very often that when I disparage the ACC, you don't hear me disparage the baseball end of it. There's a lot of good teams in there, including I'm not sure where North Carolina's coming to town this weekend. It's exciting for me. It's exciting for any, you know, baseball fan that wants to follow Notre Dame baseball, but pump the brakes a little bit, but not that much, because they've been impressive. They have shown great moxie and great leadership, and it's going to be fun to watch this weekend when North Carolina comes to town.
I had a friend from Atlanta play baseball, Dante McDowell, at North Carolina, and I can assure you, Tim, these people are not thinking about their baseball team right now, but the incredible anger they feel after one game of the NCAA tournament in North Carolina, boy, oh boy. I cannot imagine how that feels down there in Chapel Hill, because they take that seriously.
Well, what other option? Yes. What option do they have beyond Hubert Davis?
I heard an interesting conversation on this. Was their options are so much more limited because they can't, the fan base won't accept the next great up-and-coming mid-major coach like Notre Dame's fan base can accept something.
That's why I asked the question, because it's just great. Not, you don't just reach out and grab Rick Pitino.
I was going to say Rick Pitino.
I mean,
yeah, that's a tough situation.
But Hubert Davis, I mean, I picked against him because I don't.
Say, you're not a Hubert Davis guy.
No, I'm not. No, you know, I mean, Wilson's injured, and you know, I mean, that's debilitating for any team, a guy of that ability. But I don't trust him in the tournament, and it was warranted this time around again.
Before we get to segment two, Thursday's podcast, Tim, you might have a conflict, so you're going to talk about your Cubs very briefly. And someone has asked us specifically, because JB is obviously a Braves fan, I'm a Red Sox fan, someone has asked for Drew Bentock's fandom. We want to hear this first as we hit opening week in Major League Baseball.
Yeah, so I'm actually a Kansas City Royals fan, which might sound random. My dad grew up in Wyoming before the Rockies were there, so that was the team he got on the radio.
I've heard you say that before.
The Royals. So yeah. He passed it on to me. I grew up as a fan of a team who wasn't close and was awful, but for whatever reason the fandom sucked, and it paid off in 2015 at least.
Tim Priester, Chicago Cubs. Across the board, I see projected number one. So,
I've been a Cub fan too long to be that optimistic. I've been a Cub fan too long to be that. Yeah, I can't be that optimistic. I'm a Cubs fan, but no, they're good. I mean, there's no doubt about it. I was, you know, I think we were all hoping that Justin Steele, considering was injured in the first game of last year. Arm injury, though, he won't be ready till June. If he was fully healthy, I'd feel a lot more confident about it. Bregman at third base, you know, an injury is coming up at some point, you want to talk about leadership on a baseball field. I want that guy on my team all the time. I think Pete Crow Armstrong, you know what the difference between Pete Crow Armstrong and Javi Baez is or was? Pete Crow Armstrong wants to be a great baseball player. Oh, Javi Baez, eh. He was spectacular. Believe me, helped lead them to the World Series. But you know, he was a guy that he'd drive the ball to right field with authority, but that would take away from his desire to yank the ball to the left side. So he didn't want to be great, and he got himself out as a hitter. I know he's still playing for the Tigers, and he made the All-Star team last year. But Pete Crow Armstrong wants to be great, and I think he'll do what it takes to be great.
You want more baseball consternation? There's a chance that John Bryce will be on Thursday, so you'll hear all about the Braves, and he will say something disparaging. We'll be back with segment two, Burning Up the Boards. Welcome back to segment two. We call it Burning Up the Boards. First question from Tally Alley, who's becoming a bit of a regular here, guys. This group has mentioned a few times how Aeneas Williams will make a lot of guys miss this year, but won't have the high frequency of long touchdown runs. Certainly not arguing he has J Love or Price speed, but he did seem to have multiple 40-yard TD runs on limited carries last year. Can you expand a bit on why you don't think he'll have many breakaway TD runs?
Well, I do think that, sir, I think he has three over 40 yards in his career, but I do think a lot of that has to do with he did it last year against Syracuse and Navy. So I think that's part of it. Also, Jeremiah Love finished second with, I think he had 7 40-plus yard touchdowns. The other two guys played in more games than him, too. So I think you're talking about two guys with elite speed. I mean, Jeremiah Love ran a 4.36 at the NFL Combine. So I think it's a big part. Even if he makes the same guys miss, he's not rolling over on top of a guy from Navy and then getting up and outrunning everybody for 40 yards and things like that. So just the ability to kind of hit one cut and then get to top speed that Jeremiah Love have, that's hard to replicate. And I don't think he has quite the same speed or wiggle that Jadarian Price has, even if he can still be effective and do a lot of great things. That those two players were elite at doing that. And Jeremiah Love was arguably the best in the country at it.
Didn't he? Williams had a long run against Army the year before, his freshman year.
Correct. He did. Yeah, he had a 58-yarder.
Long runs are long runs, not to take anything away from him. I just think after we've just watched Jeremiah Love and Jadarian Price, to envision another running back like that is very, very difficult to do. Having said that, I love his, you know, I think his first step is really, really quick and explosive. I think he's going to run through some tackles. You know, I like him. We're talking about Love and Price now, yeah. You know, and I think the point is, yeah, he's shown it, but it hasn't been against, you know, top notch competition. But hey, I'm bullish on Aeneas Williams. I want to see him at full strength. It was really, really exciting to see him in the first practice last Friday in a red jersey. And we said on the podcast, it's like, you know, they weren't in pads, but he played he had to practice like he was in pads. So very high on him. I just, when I have Price and Love in my mind, it's hard for me to envision that.
Yeah, and these are fourth, he only played in the fourth quarter the last couple of years, but guys get, he had a 58-yard touchdown run in the fourth quarter against Army when everybody's up playing. I mean, you could say, well, it's even more impressive because he has offensive linemen that are not all starters. But in the fourth quarter, when the game's over, that's when you break those extra long runs. And he had a 51-yard run for a touchdown against Stanford in the fourth quarter. His long touchdown against Navy in the fourth quarter. I just don't think it's the same situation as Aeneas Williams going in there and bursting through like Jeremiah Love does the first half and Jadarian Price. But most important, we're not disparaging Aeneas Williams at all. Tim, you hit the nail on the head. They were absolutely the best breakaway runners Notre Dame has had since, Ricky Waters? I mean, more than Julius Jones, right? Julius Jones is great, but for 1 year there, 2 years there, but they were special.
Yeah. But, you know, I mean, picture in your mind the touchdown run against Army. That was a touchdown 5 yards after he accepted the handoff. That's how quick he was out of the chute. So I see that. I mean, I picture that in my head still, and we've seen it happen.
I just think he has breakaway runs like Kyren Williams, not like Jeremiah Love and Jadarian Price. I don't think there's anything wrong with that.
I agree. And if he gets the second level and somebody catches him, you're not going to be shocked. Whereas as soon as those other two got past everybody, you're like, they're done. Like, it's over. So I just don't think he has that level of speed in there. There's a difference when Notre Dame does play teams that aren't Stanford and Syracuse.
Yeah, defensive backs are usually faster than running backs. They weren't faster than Price and Love. That also is a reality of football. DBs can run. They can't run like Jeremiah Love and Jadarian Price. Next question is a lot of wide receiver stuff. Three-parter, so bear with me. Chris Koziak wants to know the wide receiver rotation today, but more importantly, how much it would look different in January. Otsterpol, is it known whether Jaden Greathouse's spring practice injury designation is because they are limiting him with hamstring usage, or is he currently injured and unable to practice? We do have an answer definitively for that. And Annie Davis, I know fall camp is more important, but can Jaden Greathouse really afford to be missing reps in the spring?
Let's start with Greathouse, and then collectively we'll talk about a depth chart. Yes. How about that? You know, I think there's other people who the spring is more important to, but as we were talking about before, while we were not recording, there is a bit of a pattern with hamstring injuries with Greathouse. I actually had kind of forgotten that was an issue his freshman year. Clearly, it compromised his entire season last year. And then when Marcus Freeman says, you know, we've got, or maybe it was Rob Hunt that said at first that, you know, he's got a bit of a hamstring. And so, yeah, I mean, it's concerning. I don't think that he's the kind of guy that needs an abundance of reps to be up to speed, as long as he's, you know, healthy and ready to go. But everybody needs practice reps. Marcus Freeman will tell you that every day of the calendar year. So, yeah, he needs it, but there are other guys that need it more than he does, is how I would put it.
I think the biggest, if I were him, my biggest concern would be is if, especially if this happens again, but if, I mean, we talked about how good we thought Mylon Graham looked, and if Mylon Graham has this spring to build that rapport with CJ Carr and kind of maybe put him ahead of himself, it could put him further back in the depth chart than he would want to be without these spring reps. So, I mean, I think it's, I'm a little concerned for him. Just, I mean, this, as you mentioned, this is a pattern. This is something he deals with a lot. And I mean, I've pulled my hamstring before. That's a pretty debilitating thing too. And if he can't seem to really overcome it or doesn't really know how to read his body in terms of when he is able to come back and perform at that level, because it keeps happening, I don't know. It just happens so long that it's definitely kind of a little bit of a red flag, I guess.
Hamstrings are tough because you don't know when you can trust it. I haven't had a pulled hamstring in a long time, but you know what I'm saying? I mean, Jimmy, you ever dealt with that?
I have not had a hamstring issue. No.
Yeah, you just don't like I wrapped it real tightly, you know, to it, like, and so in your mind you feel like, okay, it's held into place, but it really isn't.
Yeah, it is easy to redo. I think I happened in slow pitch softball because I stopped stretching and stuff like that. But it happened repeatedly. Yeah, definitely different than him. I'm not trying to compare my athletic prowess to his at all. But
nor am I.
It is easy to do, and you don't realize it, and then until you tweak it again. But it's with all the medical. I also didn't have the medical staff or anything like that he has. That it's kind of surprising that he's not able to overcome this or retweaked it in winter workouts, which I think is when this happened. This isn't necessarily a lingering thing from the season. It's something that happened while they were doing running and sprints and stuff like that and workouts.
You guys have to have more dynamic stretching like Notre Dame does for a couple periods, and then your hamstrings won't bother you so much. I do want to clarify, Rob Hunt said, I wasn't even going to mention Greathouse along with Leonard Moore. They are only limited for the first or maybe second practice. And he said, you guys are going to be there, so here's the story. They are limited that practice. Jaden Greathouse, now that it's Monday, according to last week's report, should just be back and practicing as norm. So I don't think.
Yeah, I don't know.
Hamstrings make it tough, but he said he literally said he is only limited for the first practice, he and Leonard Moore. Now, it's a hamstring, so I'm sure it lingered to Saturday as opposed to Friday. But like, the plan was he was practicing full after the weekend.
Yeah, my first impression was, oh, okay, it looks like he's favoring it, but I don't think that's what it was. He was just playing it smart. He was going 50 to 75%, and that's why I pointed out in the podcast Friday that it wasn't like Greathouse wasn't out there, because he was running the the positional drills early on, and then he was running and maybe three quarter sprints pace, pace. So hopefully that's the case. He does need to, I mean, he can't afford to miss the whole spring. He's got to get a rapport. He doesn't have a rapport with
CJ. But he's not supposed to be. Like, he is not, just to clear it up for the question that was there, he is not expected. He's not even listed on the limited list. Yeah. He was not even on the list. So I want people to know, if they missed that on our first incident analysis, he is not even listed as a guy who will be limited this spring. Rotation. Do you guys go more than five deep right now?
Probably not, because I can see Gilbert and Porter at the boundary, and I can see Faison and Graham, and I think Graham's a guy that you can move around.
Yeah.
Graham's arrival is probably not good for Elijah Burris, at least in the short term. And then in the slot, I mean, you got, you know, Great House, and what are your other options there? Bubba Frazier was getting reps the other day. Finley's an interesting guy there, because he's very, I don't know if I mentioned this in the Friday podcast, but he is very tight endish, and I see now why people maybe didn't initially rate him higher. I think the expanse of his game is so good that's why I had him rated a lot higher. But, I mean, what other options do they have in the slot?
I mean,
Soldati has played that played the slot
like
before.
I like Burris as a by the time it rolls around to be a reserve on the outside.
Well, I think that's a great idea. How many reps have you seen him take there?
No, not enough. No, not okay. Slot necessarily. Just be in the rotation.
Okay,
Faison's back up or in the slot. I think there'll be a lot of guys moving different spots.
So you think there's six.
He is the sixth that I could see. Burris is the sixth.
That's fair.
As of now. But I shouldn't say, I mean, after one practice, you would say Cam Williams is the sixth that you could see. But I'm going by more than that one practice.
That's probably wise. And I think I'll be curious too, because Faison, obviously, he's not doing lacrosse anymore. He'll be a senior. I'm curious how much he stays in the field this year too, if that limits that rotation a little bit.
Yeah, there's still Cam Williams, as Bettis. There's
16 of them. So there's a bunch.
Our
next question is from Jay Jude. Looking ahead, Notre Dame is likely in the last season of the top four linebackers, Snead, Bowen, Osbury, and KVA. Do you think there will be a need to go to the portal next season?
My question to Chris Ash prior to the Dunham question was about Ko'o Kia, because we had been given, as John Bryce mentioned, that was a name that was being bandied about as huge improvement. I asked Ash specifically, we saw number 16 playing, you know, because they're missing so many guys, he was a number two linebacker, a second teamer. I said, I want to ask you about Ko'o Kia because I've heard he's made strides this year. He said, well, it's a good thing you didn't ask me last year because I couldn't have told you anything. And I thought that was a great, honest answer. In other words, he was nowhere near any radar. First thing he said was, and they don't mention the word portal ever, because I think you're not supposed to do that as a college coach when you have your own team in the spring. He said, we could lose a bunch of guys. We're going to lose some. He didn't mean the portal. He means being good. KVA going pro, Snead going pro as a fifth year, Osbury going pro as a fourth year, Bowen going pro out of eligibility. Could lose all four. He goes, we need to know who the next guy is. And his Ko'o Kia now has a spring to see if he could be the next guy. And he did a great job of couching it with, though it's not this year Ko'o Kia is going to beat one of those guys out. It is he a guy that can be a starting linebacker for Notre Dame, or, you know, in the rotation in 2027?
Yeah, and it's a great question because, well, first of all, again, I'm going to go back to quoting Chris Ash from your question, Tim. Early signs, he can be the next guy. Big body, can run, and is physical. We've seen his physicality in very small amounts. Excellent question, because they may have to go to the portal. You're looking at Kia. You're looking at Faremo, Rezac. We don't know anything at this stage about him, and then Thomas Davis, Clapper, Amari Irvin in the next class. It's a great question because there's an excellent chance that Notre Dame's going to be pretty depleted at linebacker after the 2026 season.
Yeah, I think if they lose those four, then yeah, you definitely think they'd have to go to the portal. I think, I mean, especially with how much nickel they run, when, you know, we don't know when KVA will be back. We don't know when he'll be back and look like his former self, and how much time would he need to impress to want to go to the draft, because he's a guy I think a fully healthy full season could be a linebacker who's pushing to be a first round pick. And I don't know if he could just get drafted, he would return for another year. And I think Osbury, there's, you know, again, with there being a lot of times where there's only two linebackers on the field, I could see him being a guy who comes back for his fifth year too, and somebody who Nordy would want to recruit back. So I don't think it's a foregone conclusion, but they're definitely losing two of them. And again, if all four go, then I think you have to look to the portal to get some experience there.
You know, we're so used to, I mean, the last few years, Bertrand, Kaiser, Snead, Osbury, KVA, Bowen, Faramo entered the picture then. We're so used to that same general core of linebackers that that's why I think it's a really good question by Jay Jude, because you could wake up tomorrow and suddenly you're pretty barren at linebacker.
Faramo entered that core alone. That's the difference.
Yes. We have a question from Denver Maximus. Nickelback has arguably become one of the most important positions on the field. How important is it for Notre Dame to come out of the spring with a guy that they can say, yep, he's our nickel?
Go ahead, Drew.
I don't know if it's vital that they come out of the spring that way. I think it's vital they at least have some pretty good options. Like, I think we've seen a lot from Dallas Golden that thinks he could get there. Christian Gray is just kind of getting that process. So if we come out of the spring at least knowing that like one of those two guys could definitely work there, but I don't know that it needs to be like we have our next nickel. I think maybe different from previous years where they had like a guy who was supposed to be that nickel they brought in to specifically play that. I think they have a lot of body types that also fit elsewhere. So you need to see guys who you're like, I know I could put in this spot and we could have success there, but I don't know that you need to have like the spot locked down by the end of the spring.
I think if Golden is 1A and you know you have a 1, you know you want a 1B, you're okay. You can search through. I mean, McKinney hasn't played it, Gray hasn't played it, but someone's gonna have to learn to play it a little more. Because I still contend that on November 7th, the nickel is none of those guys I just mentioned.
Well, and you're not.
It is Leonard Moore going and standing in front of Malachi.
Oh, Tony. Sure. Let's go absolutely.
Play and find out what happens. Yeah.
The rest of the question I didn't include, what is it about Golden that makes the coaches feel he can be the one? He's listed 6 foot, and Gray is similar to this as well. They're both listed at 6 foot, but when you're on a practice field and standing in near them, they have very long arms. Golden is just, I think Golden is one of the best overall athletes on the team. Again, he's only listed at 6'0", but he's got a lot of ability there. I agree with you, Drew. I don't think it's necessary that you come out and say, okay, he's the one. I do think it's very important that you come out of the spring and say, okay, Christian Gray's ready to go there too, because we don't really know that at this point. It doesn't hurt to have a really, really nice tandem of nickels. But I'm extremely bullish on Dallas Golden, because I think he has all the tools to be a tremendous defensive back, wherever you place him.
Yeah, and he's a guy, he didn't arrive till last summer. Again, they threw him at nickel the week before he had to play it in a game. Like, this is a guy who's really just learning to play the position, and we've already seen some things that coaches really like, and he can make plays when he's on the field. So even if there are times where he might make a mistake, like, he can make up with that in an interception or getting his hand on the ball and things like that too. So I think a lot of those things play into like why the coaches are so high on his potential there.
I was shocked they got two defensive backs and neither one of them was a nickel. I really was surprised by that. But they have a plan, and it was Mike Mickens' plan originally with Chris Ash's plan. So they have a good plan. I'm sure they have a good plan.
And we don't really know much about Nick Reddish other than, oh, yeah, he stepped in front of a Noah Grubbs pass on Friday and took it the distance. So, you know, maybe they have I wouldn't expect to play three, but maybe they have a budding nickel in Reddish as well.
Priester, the way we treated Noah Grubbs on those first five throws, you, myself, and Mike Frank, he intercepted a future Hall of Famer. So it's obviously he's a pretty good freshman.
I'm sure we'll be accused of thinking that. And I think we've emphasized that it was one practice of him throwing hard and accurately. But it was on my part, it was unexpected. And right. So good for him.
Next question from Frankenkow. What's the best case scenario for the backup quarterback competition in 2026 and thus beyond? My thinking is you want Gerard and one more to look relatively good. Gerard wins it in the spring of 27, which locks down the other as a backup. If Gerard wins this running away, we could be looking at both Grubbs and Hebert leaving in the winter. He's obviously saying CJ Carr is winning the Heisman, the national championship, and going pro as well in this scenario.
Drew?
I think I definitely agree with this line of thinking. I think it's going to be hard for Teddy Gerard to come in and have a fall camp where he's clearly winning the job and going to have it after the season. And I mean, there's a decent chance he spends a lot of the fall on scout team taking a lot of those duties. So I think there is going to be I think it's unlikely that he's just, as a should be high school senior, going to lock down the job that quickly. But I do think you want definitely to be another quarterback, whether it's Grubbs or Hebert, to look good and look like they could be an option there. Because you do want, I mean, you don't want to totally count on Teddy Girard. Like, there's a lot of reasons to be high on him, but you don't want that to be your only option.
Right.
And yeah. And so, and I think for what we saw in Grubbs, I think it would, he has a lot of talent. They've said he can make all the throws. So you'd like to see some of that progress and have a real competition, at least between those two, coming into the spring.
Under the circumstances, like if you just had Girard here in the spring, okay, that would be the best you could make of the situation with, you know, young quarterbacks. You know, but obviously he's got to finish his junior year of high school. He can't be here yet. So, you know, that's unfortunate. I mean, we suspect that the future of Notre Dame's quarterback position is not going to be Blake Hebert, but you know, you've got two young guys there that are going to have to be really, really quick studies. I brought up to Den Brock about, you know, mainly the velocity of Grubbs, and I think he kind of backed away from you know, crowning him like some of us were, I guess, the other day. And, you know, he did admit that he threw the ball really, really well for a young guy that was rattled. I mean, he flat out, he was on the field with him, so he would have known whether right. he was rattled or not, and he was, but he didn't throw the football like he was rattled.
Our next question is from Irish from A2. When watching the NCAA tournament, are you encouraged or discouraged with the state of ND basketball? On one hand, it's encouraging to see how quickly a program can go from mediocre to Sweet 16 with the right coach.
I mean, yeah, Nebraska being the Sweet 16, Iowa beating Kansas with probably a $15 million difference in the roster there. Not Iowa, obviously, is involved in NIL. They're in the Big Ten, but Kansas is in NIL. But there's still 14 teams in the Sweet 16 that played a different sport all year than Notre Dame did. So that discourages me when I watch them playing a different sport than I covered all year. There's a different sport I didn't know about. I covered Notre Dame men's home basketball games. There's all these people playing a different sport that same night. I didn't realize it.
I feel along the lines that you do, T.O., because, I mean, the only comparison between what we saw this week in the NCAA tournament and Notre Dame basketball is that Notre Dame will be playing basketball next year like those guys will be. That's the similarity. They will all be playing a basketball season next year.
Yeah, I agree. I don't have too much to add to that. I agree with both you guys in the state of Notre Dame basketball.
A coach does make a huge difference for getting to the NCAA tournament, though. The Sweet 16, you need a lot of. You need more than that. You either need that incredible effort by Nebraska's veterans and a hell of a coaching job, or you need a ton of talent.
And look,
Sweet 16 is talent.
No doubt. I mean, there are no. It's all major conference teams in the Sweet 16.
Yeah, when Texas is the 11 seed, it's not really 11 seed. It's a team.
No, exactly. Exactly right. Playing great competition all year. Now, if Shrewsbury can retain the key people in the program and then go out and get two significant transfers that are in the top six rotation, seven rotation, in addition to what, you know, the young guys that got experience this year, great. But I mean, it starts at the top and you got to have great leadership. And I didn't think at the end of the year, the great leadership was being shown. So right now they're playing basketball games like the rest of the NCAA.
And pretty sure before I go to the next question, I want to ask you, cause this was, remember we talked about this early December bowl or mid December bowl games versus the NIT. Guess how many fans on a Sunday night packed the pit in New Mexico? We may have put the NIT to rest too early some places in this world. 10,000 fans came to go to the pit to watch George Washington on a Sunday night. God bless them. They're basketball fans. See, some people want to be in the NIT.
That's awesome. Now, never having spent any time in New Mexico, I would imagine if I was born and raised there, I would be looking for something to do.
But the pit is like one of those places where they have pride. They have a real basketball pride at that place.
Oh, no doubt. No.
So Notre Dame could have that too if you take some pride in the program.
Well, they're a long way from that. But yeah, no, I mean, New Mexico is known for that pride in their program. I think that's awesome.
It was cool to see. It wasn't quite like Nebraska.
Well, they're not accustomed to going
to the round of 32. My God.
Yeah, they're not accustomed. New Mexico's not I mean, they don't, you know, they're making not making deep runs in the NCAA tournament, so their opportunity is the NIT. So I get it from a fan standpoint.
Yeah.
We have a question from Philifel. Coach Freeman talked about evaluating how Notre Dame prepares to start the season. What are the main things that should be reviewed since there are multiple things in place, including quarterback, coordinators, captains, et cetera?
I mean, I think transitioning from training camp to season prep, there's got to be something you can change, because if they played a team that wasn't Tennessee State, they lost by week two. In Marcus Freeman's tenure, if they played a team that wasn't named Tennessee State, they lost by week two. They also lost by week one two other times. I mean, they were good teams, Ohio State and Miami. That's plenty of losses, right, in weeks one and two for 4 years. It's a legit question at this point. You've lost to Mac. You've lost to Mac. You've lost to ACC. I couldn't remember what conference Miami was in because that conference sucks. You lost to ACC. You lost to the Big Ten. I mean, get better early. Get better transitioning from your training camp to – it's a strange thing to me, Tim, but it's 4 years of it.
It's strange, and it has been 4 years of it. I start thinking, well, okay, you got Bloody Tuesday. Well, you know, once they get rolling in the season, Bloody Tuesday seems to be working pretty well for them.
Yeah.
So, I mean, I don't know how to specify what you're saying about transition from camp into the first couple games. Freeman's, you know, tearing everything apart to try to find the answer to that. I don't know what it would. Drew, do you have something that you would, you know, specify as to what they can do from camp into the first two games of the season?
Yeah, I mean, it's interesting because last year specifically, it seemed like they didn't realize how disjointed they were. Like, they had no idea that they were going to come out and they're, you know, by week two, their secondary were going to be looking at each other like, what are we doing, and putting their hands up and stuff. So I'm not exactly sure how you solve that. But I think the biggest thing is this year, at least they have time to figure out against lesser opponents. Usually at the years you mentioned, T.O., they're playing a top 10 team that is going to compete for the college football championship in the first couple of weeks. So, I mean, they've obviously lost to two much worse teams than that too. But yeah, I don't know what specifically they have time to develop. And I think that's good. And this season kind of sets up well, although I guess with the returning production and the returning coordinators, maybe last year's schedule would be better when Miami is losing so many guys. So maybe that would be a more advantageous time to play them.
And I expect them to start at least 6-0. So, but if you look at it this way, they have played three good teams in Marcus Freeman's 4 years. They're 1-2 in the first two games. Okay. They have played one team that doesn't count in Tennessee State. We can all agree that game doesn't count in terms of an actual result that happened there. But they also lost they're 3-2 against bad teams. Navy, they beat Navy. They lost to Marshall and Northern Illinois. You gotta be better than that. You have to be better than that.
Well, Central
Michigan to be your next team, I guess, if you want to throw away Tennessee State. But it was week three. They beat them. It wasn't a great game. They got Hartman hurt.
This is a great direct question.
Yeah, we don't have an answer.
To Marcus right. Freeman.
Okay. Yeah.
Yeah, no. Philifel, this is a great question to ask directly of Marcus Freeman. Since you won't have the opportunity, we'll try to do that.
We should do that in August, too. We should do it in August.
Yeah.
You can coach speak yourself out of this in April.
Yeah. No, that's exactly right. That's exactly right in August.
Next question from the best name of the day, Ray Zeller Spatz. Explain to me why we don't read anything into the day one defensive line starters, which were Hughes and Mukum from your reports, but we do look at all the other positions with their starters and consider that reality. What were there other positions in which presumed starters backed up presumed backups? I included it because it's an interesting.
And it's a great observation. But I, you know, I don't think that Armel Mukum's going to start the first game of the year. Elijah Hughes has a much better opportunity to do that. But I don't think that, you know, I think it was just kind of a seniority thing.
Only not being there was probably.
I'm not sure why that was what it was. But I don't think that we're. I don't think that we're missing the boat that Armel Mukum's going to start the first game of the year. It's good to have him back. It's a big body. I thought he played hard the other day. He always plays hard.
Yeah.
It's a question of effectively getting out blocks and being consistent in you know, disrupting the offensive line up front. But I don't have the reason why, but I'm but you know, you can't tell me that, you know, Teon Gray and Onye and Brew aren't going to be in a much better position to start the first game of the year than Armel Mookum.
Yeah, I mean, I think some of it too is just that they rotate so much more at that position than they do most other places. So it, I do think it carries maybe a little less weight who's out there as a starter in general. And I also think if you look at some of the other positions, like the presumed starters for the most part at defensive tackle, or at least two of them, are transfers, where if you look at the linebackers in the secondary, they're all returning players who've played quite a bit. So it's a little bit different, whereas I don't know that you want to come out on the first day and have Teon Gray out there on his first practice ever at Notre Dame with the first team. Like, I think you just look at it a little differently. You want to make sure they earn the job, even if they're getting paid a lot and that's their expectation. Like, you can't bring them in and make it seem like they've got it already necessarily.
I agree, and that was what I was going to say was my exact answer, but Mylon Graham was the first wide receiver that walked out there. Devontae Smith last year was the first nickel that walked out there. It happens, too. I really believe it is. It's that, Drew. It's like where you end your winter conditioning in terms of what they used to call SWAT team things. I really think it comes down to the offseason you had when you're in the running for the spot and you're there. But it's not that way at offensive line, because they went left to right exactly how they would start the season if the season had to start today. So I just found that an interesting question, because Tim Priester's right. Why? Because we don't think Mookum's going to start.
Yeah, I mean, it's a great question.
Why does it matter everywhere else when you report?
I never in a million years would I have come up with that observation. So yeah, great observation.
I liked it. Well done, Ray Zeller, spats. And if you don't know what spats are, that means you are too young to look at cool cleats and you only look at the new ones. Final question. Terry Benedict, besides the quarterback position, what is the difference from being a national title contender and a national title favorite?
Drew Mentach.
I think just looking, I mean, I think Notre Dame, I guess honing on them, like we know their defense is going to be great. We have a lot of confidence in what CJ Carr can do. I think they really need, especially since they won't have the level of running backs they had last year, you need a really strong go-to wide receiver, somebody who really kind of can help them take things deep and open up a lot of different things for the offense. So I think you look at a lot of teams. I mean, Ohio State, obviously, when they won 2 years ago, they had really good receivers. I think we referenced Bill Connelly already on this podcast. He talks about one of the main drivers of success is like returning wide receivers specifically. That's always been the case in the past. Maybe that's less so in the transfer portal era, but I think having really strong wide receiver play, especially if you have one or two guys you can really count on, and Mylon Graham hits, Jordan Faison picks up where he left off or and it expands on that, would be significant.
You know, I think, I mean, there are so many components to this. I look at the running back position. We haven't mentioned Nolan James Jr.'s name yet, but in today's game, you know, there are bell cow, teams have bell cow backs, but not many. And Notre Dame had a tandem last year, and I think they need a tandem again this year with Williams and James at the forefront. I think it's a great point, Drew, about a go-to wide receiver, whether that's, you know, maybe, I mean, Faison really ended up, I mean, Faison had the most receptions last year. Malachi Fields came through in clutch situations. But, yeah, that, you know, if you have that one go-to guy, you know, that can set you apart. Having lockdown corner, that helps. Having great, having the best secondary in the country, that helps. Having depth that we've rarely seen at Notre Dame and a level of talent on the roster that I have compared to 1993, that helps. And you know what really helps is a head coach that knows how to take a team to the national championship game, which Notre Dame's head coach did that last year. I think it's really, you know, I mean, we all felt like Notre Dame absolutely deserved to be in the playoffs last year. You sure wish you would have had that opportunity. And even if you came up short last year, you would at least had that experience in the postseason for the second year in a row going into this season, where you think you have the most talented roster in 30 years or whatever it is. So a lot of components to it. Returning production is a significant part of it. Bill Connolly's stat, and Notre Dame has a whole bunch of that.
Defensive depth. You have to have great players first, but you have to have really good players in reserve. And that some of the old Notre Dame defensive depth would get, you'd lose by 50 points in a playoff game if you went out there with the old defensive depth. You have to have it. I would say, I mean, Notre Dame's needed offensive line depth, but I feel like they've been almost snake bitten by you. You don't normally have to start 10 linemen on a run to the national championship. But with 16 games, depth is the most important thing for me. Drew, that's a great point about wide receivers. They're the differentiators. Notre Dame doesn't have a national title because Ohio State had differentiators at wide receiver. That game, Ohio State ran the ball well. Notre Dame ran the ball well. They both hit hard. They both played well. Both played gritty. Ohio State had differentiators at wide receiver against very good players in the secondary. They hard to keep them truly down when they're that good at wide receiver.
And when Notre Dame had a differentiated wide receiver in that game, Jaden Greathouse, they made a run at that. Ohio State.
God, that sounds, seems like a long time ago for Jaden Greathouse. This will be a topic for another day, but good point of the coach. How many coaches currently have coached, is it six, have coached in a championship game that are active? That'll be Kirby. It'll be Kirby Smart, Dabo Sweeney, the last four.
Oh, yeah.
The last four guys would be right there. I'm trying to think there's another outlier out there. Kalen DeBoer has been in the...
Who's the TCU head coach?
When they lost to Michigan?
Yeah.
Yeah. Why am I blanking on that?
Yeah.
I'm not supposed to play bad radio anymore. Way to go, Drew.
I was about to say it for you. So.
You were about to say Gary Patterson.
Yeah.
Yes, coach did it. So.
Notre Dame almost had a chance going against Gary Patterson this year, but the team on the left coast doesn't want to play the game anymore.
I forgot about that. I forgot that Gary Patterson is there. He will help them. All right, we're going to look up who TCU's current head coach is, because that's way good at way to end the podcast. And we'll be back Thursday. I think we'll have a chance to see Notre Dame practice for a few periods.
Dykes.
That one. Until then, for Tim Priester, yes, there you go. Thank you, Priester. Until then, for Tim Priester and Drew Bentek of Irish Illustrated, I'm Tim O'Malley. Thank you for watching and listening to what was very informative until the last final seconds, Irish Illustrated Insider.